This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep up with everything happening here at 92.9 FM ESPN, you can download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you. You excited watching this first day of the Masters so far?
I'll tell you in about 3 hours when I see whatever number Rory posts. My company as he is each and every Thursday on the program. He writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter on X at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Good day, sir. I have emerged from the fog of college basketball, and I am donning my green jacket today in honor of what is the beginning of my golf season. Exciting times.
Always an exciting time. I mean, this stretch of basically starting right from the first weekend of the tournament through, honestly, of course, WrestleMania next weekend. It's as good as we can do in sports when you consider we don't have football. All apologies, of course, to the UFL.
It doesn't get much better, especially not when the Final Four delivers like the Final Four did. And, man, I'm just looking at these conditions and the names that we have. I know there's no Tiger, but I think we're in for a really good Masters this week, man. I think we are.
I hope we're in for a storybook one.
You want Rory. Is it Rory or bust for you? I get it.
Well, it's Rory or Pepper Pal's Masters pool. I believe they were calling it. What did they, I think it was the Pimento Syndicate. What did they just refer to it as? Yes, the Pimento.
I got pimento cheese on my burger last night.
Yeah,
specifically
I respect. That's a man that's ready. That's a man that is absolutely ready for first Masters today. Yeah, we're calling it the, so I care about Rory first and foremost. Then it's the group chat pool, office pool, if you will. And then really it's just anyone but Bryson.
Are there any Pepperdiners in the field?
Sahith and Joe Highsmith.
Okay. Look at you with the pool.
So we have two Pepper Pals out there making around. I don't think Putnam's in there. I definitely don't think Putnam's in there. But those would be the two. So
repping the Notre Dame of the Church of Christ on
yes,
golf's biggest
of course.
Stage.
Listen, yep. Everyone's got to be out there. Let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program as my Zoom on my computer restarts, but Cobb's still there because he's on George's computer. We will start with, of course, there's a big one tonight at FedEx Forum. Late night for us all. We've got the TNT game. The Grizzlies are hosting the Timberwolves. They'll turn right back around, and then they'll fly out to Denver for another massive one. So we'll basically start with the Grizzlies. Eric's going to join us like he does each and every Thursday. He's going to join us next segment. We'll get into the list. If we don't get into NIL conversation, Cobb and I have noticed a new trend, and we want to discuss a new trend that might involve Tennessee's starting quarterback. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know what I mean. Jason Smith's going to join us during hour number two as well. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. So, Cobb, I know you've been I would imagine covering the Final Four, to me, I would assume, is a lot like when you cover a big bowl game, like the bowl game where you go for the week where you're only focused on, all right, where player availabilities, what am I writing, what are we covering, and just you're kind of locked in a big bubble. I'd imagine it's like that on steroids. Do I have that just about right?
Yeah, it's like also a college basketball convention.
Yeah.
It's crazy being there with CBS because like half the town is CBS, and then the other half is just
people like Phil 68.
Who's who of college basketball? It's incredible. You're just walking down the street and it's like, oh, there's another high major coach. There's another high major coach. There's another high major coach. It's a convention almost. It's like an industry convention. And then you make all these connections. You meet people. You have your head down in a million different stories, and then boom, in the blink of an eye, it's over, and everybody's all headed to the airport and all crammed into, I mean, that poor Southwest terminal at San Antonio Airport has never seen more people. I couldn't even find a seat on Tuesday morning. It was just Florida fans and media everywhere. But it was a blast. It was an incredible experience. And I feel like the Final Four vindicated this NCAA tournament because through the first two weekends, it was a sob story about no Cinderella, no great games. What a bust, right? And then all of a sudden, the Final Four gives us two elite games on Saturday. And on Monday night, it wasn't like there was a lot of pretty basketball down the stretch, but it was a close game. So that helped.
It was also great theater. I agree. It was not the greatest game you're ever going to watch, but you could feel the magnitude of the game. And to me, like that's an interesting watch just in of itself.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was the intensity, the drama, all that. It was real. It was palpable. You have legacies hanging in the balance, and just hard not to feel sick for Kelvin Sampson, for Houston. Much like what happened to Duke on Saturday night, they then end up on the other side of it Monday night. And it's one of those situations where at Kelvin Sampson's age, yes, he's got it rolling. No, Houston isn't going anywhere, but will they ever have another chance like that? Boy, I don't know. But then I thought one thing was interesting too, Jeffrey. I had an experienced mid-major coach sitting right behind me. And throughout the game, I was turning around and talking to him about different situations at timeouts, at halftime and stuff. And he told me, dude, sitting here at this vantage point watching this game, it's more evident to me now than ever the gap in talent between the high majors and the mid-majors. Now, granted, he's watching two number one seeds duke it out in the literal national title game.
Well, and to your point, most of us felt like this year was a year in which the one seeds were clearly on a different level.
They were. They were. So that's why I don't necessarily agree that that this season was proof of the change that's going to transpire over the next decade in this new era, because the top of the sport was unusually dominant this season. Those four number one seeds who were there at the end, they were in a class of their own. They're four of the best teams analytically to play in college basketball in this century. And only one of them can win it. And I think in future years, there will be a more even disbursement at the top. I just think this season was unusual in just how dominant those four were at the top.
Yeah, I'm with you in the sense of I'm not willing to sit there and go the way that it is this year is going to be the blueprint for years to come. But if you make me pick between saying Cinderella's dead or Cinderella's just hibernating, if I have to pick, and I'm willing to say, like, I could be wrong, but if I had to pick, I'd say Cinderella's dead for the reasons that we just laid out. Like, because I think when everyone wants to go and point out to 2022, when we had San Diego State, when we had FAU, we had Miami, and we had UConn.
Yep. That was 23, by the way, 23.
Sorry, the 23 season. Whenever it was to point to that, I always kind of point out, and I think you would agree with me on this, the big boys in the SEC and the Big Ten hadn't quite figured out exactly how to organize an NIL.
But now they got to figure it all out again. They got to figure it all out again in the new era. And I have major questions, man, about whether the SEC can maintain the dominance if the rev share thing goes through with the House settlement, because we already know that the football schools in the SEC are going to channel as much of their resources as possible into football. Those football coaches on those campuses are going to they're going to get their boosters to give them every last penny that they can possibly get. So I just think we might have seen the SEC's high watermark in college basketball this year. And I think the conferences that historically have cared more about basketball, the ACC, the Big East, are going to find a way to claw back some of their lost influence because they're going to donate more on the dollar to basketball than the other conferences will. So I think that could change it. And then also this, man, I've got a theory that I believe in on why Cinderella is not dead. And it's this. You look at New Mexico and everybody's crying their crocodile tears over how they lost Donovan Dent, one of the best players in the portal, to UCLA. Oh, boo-hoo, this is so sad. Mid-majors can't keep their best players, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. Well, the fact is, New Mexico had Donovan Dent for 2 years. They never would get a guy like that in the old era because a guy like that would enroll at a high major as a freshman. But now there's no roster spots available for four-star freshmen. Those spots are going to transfers. And so the mid-majors are getting better players out of high school than they used to. They just can't keep them.
Yeah.
You're going to get them. You're going to have them for a year, maybe two.
So Herd and I have talked about this because I was thinking, like, I was trying to brainstorm. It's like, all right, if I had one of these less desirable jobs, what do you do? And I do think the strategy should probably be you're basically saying, like, we're AAA in that I'm going and I'm recruiting every high school kid I can find that is in like that 50 to 125 range. And I'm saying, listen, come get your numbers here, play for us, and then you can go get your big payday. The problem, though, is how many teams are going to really be able to put it together with basically like 18-year-olds? Because that's kind of the other thing is that, man, when you look at who separated themselves, like, yes, Duke had the three freshmen, but Duke also had some experience. And they also had, like, three lottery pick freshmen. Like, let's be clear on that.
And those freshmen, as good as they were, still melted down
right
in the Final Four.
And so, but if you, I mean, I don't know. Like that's kind of always been my deal is that can you get enough young talent and overcome youth to be a factor?
Sprinkle in a couple of high major down transfers, and yes, I think you could ace that formula. You could get it right enough as a Mountain West team, as an American team, as an A-10 team to piece together a run. It was never easy, right, in the first place, and it's not.
No, yeah, it's
now.
I do enjoy the people that are acting like it's now tough on mid majors. Really?
Right. You think about the way Lightning had to strike for Loyola Chicago. I mean, it literally took an act of divine intervention from Sister Jean to will them into a Final Four. You look at the run VCU got on with Shaka Smart. I mean, come on, that stuff is not easy. So it was never easy. We just got spoiled. That's what it comes down to for me. 21 through 23 in particular. Oral Roberts making a Sweet 16, FAU doing what they did, FDU beating a one seed. We got spoiled. The NCAA tournament spoiled us. 2016 through 2019, pre-NIL, pre-portal, it was pretty chalky. It was pretty chalky, but we were like, oh, well, Gonzaga's not a high major, and Houston's not a high major, and so it
they
wasn't
certainly spin
all,
like them.
Yeah, so at that point, it wasn't technically all high majors. But at the end of the day, the Final Four with four number one seeds, I don't want to see that every year. I don't think anyone does, but once every 15 years, it sure makes for a really good ending to the season.
No, I'm with you on that. Like the Final Four, I guess that's the other thing. Tim kind of talked me back off of this. We had a bad taste in our mouth from the second weekend because the last three games of the Elite Eight were so non-competitive. You know what I mean? Like the Duke-Alabama game, like you could tell like in the first 3 minutes, you're like, this is a problem for Alabama. And then you flip right around, Tennessee-Houston, it was decidedly like, this is not going to be competitive. And I know like Michigan State hung around, but I don't know. Like I kept waiting for them to like hit a shot where I'm like, maybe. But, you know, like it was one of those games that really wasn't all that competitive. But the Final Four did make up for it. But the other thing that it got me thinking about is, okay, in college basketball this year, we had the top four teams that we said separated themselves. Are you like me in the sense that I think we could have some entertaining NBA playoffs, particularly in the West, but I also think we could have a bunch of entertaining series and we look up and we just see that the Thunder might make the NBA finals going 12-2. Like, I think it's possible.
That's true.
Like, I'm kind of in the mode of, if you give me Boston, Cleveland, Oklahoma City versus the field, I'm taking Boston, Cleveland, and Oklahoma City.
Yeah, without a doubt. But I think, especially in the West, the path to get there
yes,
really good.
No, I mean, I think it could be one of those things where, like, every series that doesn't involve Oklahoma City could be, like, bananas.
Six or seven games. Yeah. That's what we need. Just give me some entertainment along the ride. And then, hey, I am all here for an OKC versus Cleveland or OKC versus Boston finals. I mean, that would be potentially fantastic. And I don't trust, just like I didn't trust Duke with all of its freshmen on the biggest stage, do I trust Oklahoma City with all of its inexperienced talent on the game's biggest stage?
You know, they're not good in close games either.
they never get into them. So it's, I mean, it hurts you in the end. But, you know, the last thing I'll say about the whole idea of mid-majors and their struggle to compete, it's this. Look at the Miami Marlins, who have appeared in World Series, you know, at various times over the last 30 years. They're the lowest budget franchise in Major League Baseball. Yet, if you draft well enough, if you develop well enough, you can still reach the sport's biggest stage. Then, yes, you're going to lose all of those guys in free agency. You're not going to be able to keep your Miguel Cabreras, your Dontrell Willises, if you will. But you had them, and you could do something with them while you got them. And so that's,
I think,
the
one problem, though, with the analogy, though, is there's no draft.
Well, but you can sign a four-star guy who's
right,
not getting the look
he deserves.
Right, but I guess
my point would be, if I have the number one pick, I can take the best guy. He's got to play with me for whatever, 6 years, however long the minor league deal is. Like, if I'm Loyola, Chicago, I can't just go and be like, all right, we finished lowest of all the Chicago teams this year. Give me the number one player out of Chicago. Like, I think that's kind of the issue. Like, I'm with you. I think there are going to be some people that figure out how to moneyball this. Like, I do. I believe that someone will be creative, someone will figure something out, and will be able to take advantage of it. Then what will happen is one of the big boys will figure out what they're doing and then do it with a bunch of money. It's, to me, if you want to use the baseball example, it's the Dodgers going, man, the Marlins are doing this, the Rays are doing this with like a $35 million payroll. How about let's do it with a $400 million payroll.
Yeah, it's all about roster construction. I think these two UConn teams and this year's Florida team show us that. I think Kansas was the last national champion in 22 to just do it with like, we're just going to find the best players we can.
Yeah.
We're going to go out and get Remy Martin from the transfer portal because he lit it up at Arizona State. And then we're going to sign the best high school guys, and it's just going to be straight talent. Because you look at Florida, you look at UConn, neither of those programs were just stacked with five-star guys. They were expertly put together by forward-thinking, analytics-based coaches. And so that's now the formula. It's not just raw talent anymore. It's the pieces fitting together, the budget working, and then you just sort of let it ride from there.
No, I think that's fair. All right, let's get on to tonight with the Grizzlies. And so you've been having to get caught up. So I think these are the interesting questions for me. So we've mentioned the standings with the Grizzlies, with the shout out to the Spurs last night for knocking off the Warriors. That's now gotten them back inside of avoiding the play-in. It is mathematically impossible. If the Grizzlies go 3-0 in their next three, they're going to avoid the play-in. At worst, I believe they will be the 5 seed. Potentially, they could be as high as 3, but if you went undefeated, it's fair to say you're in that 4-5 game. I just don't know if you're hosting it or not. But what starts to become interesting is, okay, what should the expectation be of this team? Because it was the weird kind of vibe about the Jalen Wells injury on Wednesday night was you were just so thankful that it wasn't something like life-altering. Like, yes, it sucked. He broke his arm, he's out for the rest of the year. But like, because you were just so it was such a scary scene. You were so thrilled that he was functionally okay that you're like, whew. You almost kind of set aside the fact, all right, the Grizzlies are now down another starter. And not only down another starter, when you consider with Brandon Clark out, they're basically down to, they're down two of their top eight, however you want to slice it up. I think you can make the argument it was two of their top six, given on how much they were playing. But I get with Wells, it was kind of complicated figuring out like what his actual pecking order spot was. But if you just look at minutes played, they're missing two of their top six. But now the other complicated factor for me is, all right, I assume that this means they're gonna bump up Williams into the starting lineup. But on top of missing two of your top eight, Cobb, I'm rooting for him, and I'm hoping that it's nothing more than a slump. But Luke Kennard might have the Y word.
Well, we were already worried about his playability in the playoffs from a defensive standpoint. But now, with Jalen Wells being out, you have no choice.
Like, the other thing, it's like, as bad as, like, he can't pull the trigger, and when he does pull the trigger, he's firing up, like, air balls. But at the same time, it's like, you still... Like, the conventional thought is, if Luke's not making shots, like, you don't play Luke. But it's like, now when you look at the other options, like, you gotta play Luke.
Well, I think the other thing that's become crystallized here is that Scottie Pippen Jr. is gonna have a role
in
the playoffs.
Oh,
which
yeah.
It may not, in the end, be the worst thing. Like, it's not...
You
ideal.
Better... I'm with you in the sense of, he does stuff, and he at least gives you effort, but good God, are they small.
Yeah, but Vince Williams getting the minutes he's going to get, it's only going to help him defensively. And it now crystallizes your rotation. You know, Isalo is going to have no choice but to rock with what he's got now, whereas we were going to be second-guessing, having all these takes about whether Vince should be playing over Jalen Wells, you know, right? We don't have to have that conversation anymore. And in some ways, it takes some pressure off of Isalo because now he's got no choice. He's got to play Vince Williams Jr. And if he can be what we've hoped he could be, then that's not actually a bad thing, because defensively is where this team struggles the most. We know who's going to be taking the shots in the playoffs. Finally, Dez and Ja and Jaren are going to be playing 37-plus minutes a night. So they're going to be the guys taking the shots for you. Vince Williams hasn't been great offensively, but he's better defensively than Jalen Wells. And I was always skeptical about the idea of starting two rookies in the playoffs. So now, I mean, now you're not going to be doing that. And thank goodness.
George, look up. How many games has Vince played? Has Vince played 82 games as a pro? Because remember last year, I think he only played like in the 40s, right? Because remember he missed like the last 2.5-3 months of the year?
Right. But he's
effectively a rookie. Now, he's a, whatever, 25-year-old rookie.
And he's got more muscle mass. Like, yeah. That's what I'm worried about. You mentioned Vince, how small they are.
Yeah,
like,
he does not look as slight as Jalen does.
Vince has played in 22-23. He got into 15 games, but it was about 7 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Last season, 52 games played, and this season, 24.
So we're at 67. So he's played 89, if I did the math right.
Yeah, as in he's a rookie plus. Or second year.
He's played 89, and 15 of those games were 7 minutes.
Yeah. If it helps you, he's only started 36.
So I bring all this up to say is like, yeah, we can sit there and go, avoid the play-in. I just wonder about, like, I get it. You got Ja, Dez, and Jaren relatively healthy. And, like, to a certain degree, it's like, hey, boys, this is what we're paying you for. But, man, when you start thinking about the rest of the roster, like, are they really supposed to compete with these teams?
Your original question is, what's an expectation? What's a realistic expectation?
Yeah.
Given the injuries to Wells and to Clark, given the coaching change, given the overall vibes and lack of marquee victories over the last 2 months, my expectation is no longer that the Grizzlies are going to advance in the playoffs. All season long, I would have told you, that's the minimum for what can be considered success. But things have gotten kind of so off the rails to a certain extent here that I won't be at all surprised, nor will I be maybe even disappointed if they don't advance in the playoffs. The West is lapping them right now. It's a conversation from 3 weeks ago where I said, Jeffrey, I'm afraid they might end up in the play-in. That looks very possible now. And if you end up in the play-in, you're really not supposed to be a team that advances in the playoffs. I would be pleasantly surprised if the Grizzlies did.
Yeah, Jeff and I were kind of talking about this. You know what it kind of reminds me of? If we think back to the end of the college football season when we get to Ohio State winning the championship, it was like we took this weird circuitous route up, down, up, down, up, down. But in the end, we kind of landed where we thought we were going to land, which was the two teams at the beginning of the year that we thought were going to win the national title were either going to be Georgia or Ohio State. Georgia loses their quarterback in the SEC championship game, and they kind of usher themselves out. Notre Dame stepped up. Like, I don't think you can deny that. But we got back to, okay, Ohio State was one of the two teams that we thought had a roster good enough to win it. We got there. We started this season by just saying, like, avoid the play-in. Like, get back into the top six. Have a year where you can feel like you're building on something. And while maybe the vibes are not great, I do think I've just kind of gotten back to where it's like, if they avoid the play-in now, I'm going to consider, like, considering injuries, everything, I'm going to think of this season as it could have been better, but to me it's like, if it's a pass-fail grade, they passed.
Well, it's the discourse is different here than it is nationally around the Grizzlies.
Sure.
So I was catching up on, like, the Ringer NBA podcast on my flight home the other day, trying to get a sense of, like, what the national vibe is around the Grizzlies. And there doesn't seem to be the same panic around the Grizzlies outside of the city of Memphis that there is locally. And that's to be expected to a certain extent. But nationally, they're like, oh, well, like, they kind of are, they got, they're doing okay. Like, the Grizzlies have exceeded their preseason win total at Vegas. And, they're like, nationally, people are looking at Zach Edey and thinking, wow, he's better than I thought he would be. And
I will say, I know you've been swamped in college basketball. The last few Edey games have been very encouraging.
As they've got to use him. If you're going to get rid of Jenkins, I said this all along. It's like, you can't have a top 10 draft pick and then not utilize him.
Especially when you consider what you have, the front court options available. Like, you know what I mean?
Right? That's one of my biggest concerns about the Grizzlies in these playoffs. You know, they're going to hunt Edey. And then what's your other option at the five? It's outside of playing Jaren there and going small. You got to play Huff.
If you made me guess Lamar Stevens, because Lamar defensively, like, this is kind of the moment that I knew Jenkins was done was the Portland game, when it was just so obvious, like, the team wasn't playing hard, whatnot. Like, you're like, okay, I don't know when this is going to be over, but it's over. Another alarming moment for me was he did the, I don't know what they call it. I think Eric, they call it Grizz Files, but he was doing the sit down interview with Pete in the pregame show. And maybe it's like the pinnacle advice. I don't know. It's whatever the segment is, but he's sitting down and they started talking about, because this was right after they lost Brandon, and they started talking about the options. And you realized at that point he had gone from, like, he was deep sixing Edey, and it's like Jay Huff. And, you know, when Lamar gets back from his shoulder, and I was like, oh my God, he's panicking. Like, his answer was, like, we can all root for Jay Huff. There's nothing wrong with that. But the idea that, like, you've decided in your mind that's a better option than Zach Edey, that's a problem.
And so the front office, to vindicate itself, has to go with a coach that's going to utilize Edey. Now it's going to be, unfortunately for Zach Edey, like, some of the blame is going to fall on his shoulders if they go out there and get swept and he's playing 27, 28 minutes and struggling defensively like we think he might. But if those are the lumps you have to take to sort of get him the experience he needs, sort of show him what he needs to work on defensively, then that's what it'll be. And this will go down as a developmental season. And we kind of hoped it wouldn't be another
Oh, did I tell you my spin
season.
Zone?
What's that?
I've talked myself into, this is Zach Edey's sophomore year at Purdue. Where, who was the other monster that he was sharing time with?
Trevion Williams.
Yeah, he was sharing time with Trevion Williams. At times, you'd sit there and go, why do they even play him? Like, you know, there was, but he showed enough good stuff that you're like, okay, I think next year could be good. And then when he became, in year three, when they basically said, like, you're the man, he was really good. Do I think he's going to be as dominant next year as he was his third year at Purdue? No, but I've talked myself into, I've seen enough to think that it's not insane and it's not just blind fan ambition to think that he could be really useful next year.
Well, and it, this playoff series is so, it's so going to depend on the matchup, on who you get.
Honestly,
right?
Kyle, I don't even think it matters. I think they have so few bodies. I just don't think it matters.
Yeah, but
he's going to have to be out there.
For Edie's sake, like Shingun and like what he does for Houston, like that's a tough matchup.
Oh, I think they need him. Like the Grizzlies, this is the weird thing to me. I almost think like if you really are trying to say like what is the path to winning a series, I almost think the two teams that you want to play are the Lakers and the Warriors.
Yeah, so Edie, I think, could be effective offensively against right. The Lakers because...
And he's going to rebound. I mean, like, we saw it in the last Lakers game. Like, Edie was effective rebounding.
Anthony Davis ain't on that roster anymore,
no.
Right? I mean, they got Luka, and that presents a whole other bag of problems for the Grizzlies or for anyone, for that matter. But they don't have Anthony Davis. He's been the Grizzly killer. And they didn't end up with Mark Williams because of the medicals. The medicals didn't go through there. So, like,
sounds like the Lakers might have made the medicals not go through. Seems like there was a little bit of a, let's make this look like we're trying to get Mark Williams. All right, let's continue the Grizzlies conversation. Let's talk with the man that's going to call the game tonight right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Eric Hasseltine joins the program next. Stick around, you're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM.
ESPN. True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine. He joins us now. Eric, before we get into the game, Cobb and I were trying to figure this out. If you get to the airport tonight or whatever, tomorrow morning by 1 a.m., is that a win?
Which airport?
Are y'all not flying out tonight?
No, Memphis Airport.
Yeah. I'm saying so because I was thinking, so game, let's say the game ends at what? So 8:30, what? Tip's going to be 8:37, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about probably game ends around 11.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way y'all are at Wilson Air by 1, right?
Well, we'll be there by 1. Will we take off by 1? Probably not.
So what you're thinking, you'll be at the hotel tonight in Denver, what, 4 a.m.-ish?
Yeah, that's probably accurate. You know, just a normal night in the NBA.
And then...
This is the worst scheduling
ever, tomorrow, by the way. Is tomorrow night 7 Mountain?
7 Mountain. Yeah.
So what, they obviously won't have
shooting. Basically, guys will be going to the arena 12 hours after we arrive at the hotel.
Because, right, I was trying to think, it's like, there's no way they're doing shoot around. There's, like, you know, I was like, it'll be sleep what you can, I guess, get something to eat, and then go to the arena.
Get your rest, go get lunch, you know, midday, I guess, meeting. I don't know how they're going to do it, honestly, because we don't go in for those meetings on non-shoot around days. But we've done, I've experienced this once before going to Denver. It was different, though. We were on the road, and we were in L.A., and you know how hard it is to get to the L.A. airport, but it was a 7:30 Pacific time start. Usually, you know, the good rule of thumb is if you play at 7, you're on the plane at 11, hoping to take off within the next 15, 20 minutes. Also, you know, look, when you're in Memphis, that night air is owned by the big boys. The big FedEx planes own that, so you got to find your window. So usually a 4-hour, you know, time from tip to, you know, scheduled tip to time to be there to take off is pretty fair. But when you add in the national TV longer break, you're probably looking at 4.5. So you're looking at, one a.m. Probably up in the air. And then it's, you know, about 2.5 hour, you know, flight, depending on the winds, and, you know, almost 3. And so you're looking at 3 a.m. land in Denver, or 2:40 a.m. land in Denver, and then it's about a 45-minute to an hour drive. So, yeah, 4 a.m. to the hotel. All right.
Did they win that Denver game you're talking about?
No, they did not. I literally, the funniest thing to me was we pulled into the hotel. It's a different hotel than ours now. It was a Westin in Denver that had a Starbucks right at the right as the elevators came off. There was like a little Starbucks kiosk. And these people were coming into work for the next day and work unloading
as you're getting in.
Yeah, they're like brewing coffee, and I'm like, oh, this is fun. No, and the Denver team was not shall I say very talented that year, but they had a strong upper hand. And so I've always said, like, that's one. And look, I get it's an impossible job to make the schedule so everybody's happy. You can't. There's too many factors between hockey, concerts, whatever you're using buildings for. But that's one where you got to look at and go, yeah, that's going to really shift the competitive balance. Even, you know, going from San Francisco or, you know, Utah to Denver on the second night of a back-to-back when the Nuggets don't play the night before and they're sitting back resting. I think their record, they looked it up, is just, it's like 40-5 or some ridiculous thing like that. And you're just like, okay. So it's, you know, we talked about this when the schedule was released.
What would these teams be looking like this week? Yeah. That was the first thing you pointed out.
I said, you better have something locked up by those last 3 games, 'cause those are going to be 3 tough ones. 'Cause you expected all 3 of these teams to be playoff teams. It's a tough turnaround. Denver's not playing, you know, Minnesota's on the road. So that's, you know, you got to go get number 1. And then, you know, who knew? Obviously, we didn't foresee Luka Doncic going to the Lakers mid-year, but you assume Dallas, the defending Western Conference champions, what would they be playing for on the last game? What if you're playing that team with something, you know, between the two of you? We expected the Grizzlies to be better, but, yeah, we looked at this, and I said, boy, that is going to be a tough go. So, yeah, I told all my friends this last couple of days, I said, well, if you don't hear from me for 4 days, there's good reason. So, top that off with when we get back Saturday, I may have to hustle down to Oxford to watch my son play a little baseball, because I haven't, you know, I don't get all those opportunities as much as other parents because of our travel schedule, which is part of the deal, and he understands. But, you know, you make those sacrifices, and if I got to hop in the car, land, and go right to Oxford, turn around, come right back, and get ready for a 2:30 game, I'll do it, because that's the important stuff in life.
Eric, paint me a picture of what it was like in the arena during that Jalen Wills injury and just that moment as a broadcaster. How do you handle that? And then just obviously the sense of relief subsequently to learn that it's maybe not as serious as it initially looked.
Yeah. Well, as the play happened, I saw Jalen break out. You know, it was two free throws. I saw Jalen get the step. And I was like, okay, Josh sees him. And then I saw the pass and then the dunk. And clearly his momentum going forward, I don't think KJ Simpson was trying to do anything dirty, but he put him in a bad spot. He was trying, you know, and this is what happens sometimes down the stretch when you have young guys on teams that are out of it. They're fighting to prove that they belong. KJ Simpson's a second round pick. He's obviously got a contract, but he wants to show his coaches, hey, I'm not letting go of the rope. I'm going to play. And to just the live eye, and he bumped him a little bit, and Jalen lost his grip on the rim, the momentum swinging forward, the bump threw him forward, and he had nothing to stop him. And I think on the air, I just screamed, oh no. And I kind of went silent, and then I was just like, no, you know, and you have to describe what happened. It's the scariest thing I've ever seen as an announcer. It's the worst fall I've ever seen in my 24 years live. I've obviously seen some bad ones on tape. When it happened, I couldn't tell if he landed face first or back first. I couldn't tell if he had flipped up and landed on his back. I knew he was laying face down. You're terrified. You're terrified for multiple reasons. You don't want to put out bad information. You don't want to over-dramatize it. You don't know if his family is listening or watching on TV and then maybe trying to listen on the radio. We've had interactions with his girlfriend who is looking to get into the media. And, you know, me being from Northern California, she playing volleyball at Sonoma where they met, and Jalen played basketball. We talked about, you know, that area and what's going on. And it
shout it out your terrifying. Little bro, Kurt.
Yeah, like it's one of those things where you're not trying to say anything that can get people the wrong information. I give the arena and our television crew all the credit in the world. They didn't replay it. You know, the nature is, you know, keep showing it. No, don't, because nobody could see it. It was quiet. It was somber. I could not see any movement. Now, there were a lot of people around him. We were trying to see if the camera could see that. When they stabilized him, you knew when they brought the stretcher out right away, to wheel him to the ambulance, and you knew they were stabilizing him. And I think one of the things that caught our eyes was Mark Williams, you know, seemingly was getting agitated at somebody. I don't know who that somebody was. I know Ja was near there, but I think KJ Simpson was trying to help him up initially, like trying to say, hey, man, my bad, let me help you up.
Yeah.
But as anybody that knows from football, the worst thing you can do with somebody if they have an injury to the neck is move them.
Yeah.
You can cause more damage than anything. So that's why, you know, now they have people like they don't take your helmets off. I mean, back when I was in high school, there was an incident in our area of a high school football player that got hit in the head. They didn't know the severity of it. They tried to take his helmet off, and by doing that did more damage. And so you're just like, no, just leave him prone, let the medical professionals. And I don't know if Mark Williams was flustered, thought somebody got his face in there. And somebody just said, hey, man, the guy is motionless. Like, just walk the blank away and pipe down for a second. And it was scary. And so, you know, I was trying to say as best I could in the most somber tone, like, we don't know. It was a bad fall. It was really violent. It's really frightening. Everybody's on edge. I don't want to give misinformation. So thankfully Gary was ready back in, you know, where he does the post or pre-half and post from. And we kind of said, hey, let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's do a scoreboard update, 'cause we're watching some other things. Let's see what happens. And then came the delay, and everybody's like, why is there a delay? And thankfully, again, Charlotte's people did a remarkable job in the arena. They said, hey, we can't, they're basically saying we cannot start the game until there's another ambulance on site. And you're like, gosh, I hope please tell me we'll never need it, but you have to be safe. And then the fear was misinformation, because immediately somebody sends me a text, or not immediately, but later, that says, hey, you know, Jalen's up and awake. He has to score the game. And supposedly it was from his father. And the last thing you want to do is read that without checking it. So I'm trying to call the game now, because we're back to action, and saying, hey, somebody verify that this is actually his dad sending this out, and it's not some clown. It's thinking he's funny, trying to make a name for himself. Please, not that the person sending it to me would do that, but let's make sure they didn't get duped. And when we finally got wind of it, thankfully Ross Wooden from our PR staff was doing, he does television stats on the road for Pete and Brev. And in Charlotte, they're right next to us. So I saw Ross and I'm like, what are we saying? And can we run with this? Is this right? Is this accurate? And he says, hey, Rob just said it on TV. You're good. Go ahead. Because that's always our stance. If the team doesn't announce something, if somebody gets hurt, if you see an injury, like go back to the Brandon Clark Achilles rupture a few years back. We knew what it was. We saw it. We saw it with our own eyes. We're like, it's done. Like, we've seen it before. But you can't say it. You can't say it till it's official. You just say it's an injury. It looks pretty serious. And then when the official word comes out, because the worst thing you want is to be wrong and put out that bad information. So, you know, it's a big loss. And Jalen's a tough kid. And I don't want to call him a kid. He's a tough guy. He's a grown man now. And nobody expected to get the things from him this year that you did. And to see his season end that way was really hard. But, you know, if there's anybody I think that can kind of withstand that and come back from it, it was him. And yeah, man, in the 24 years I've been doing this and then 3 years in college, there's only one other incident that, that stands out. And we had a player at UC Davis that his knee was so bad, like the knee injury was so bad that he lost the lower half of his leg. Like he had to have his leg amputated, and it was because where the university that we were playing was at, and he wasn't going to go pro. It wasn't that, just a great dude. And you're like, oh my gosh, this dude was a high level Division II college athlete. I mean, high level for Division II, and he played a football game, and tomorrow he's got one leg. He's got one and a half legs, and that's a big difference. And Sam was always, you know, super positive about it, but your heart breaks. And so that's the only other time where I was just like almost physically, you know, shaking from the fear of what was going to happen. And that obviously immediately popped in my head. You don't see Jalen moving. And so you're not trying to think the worst, but your mind can go to that worst spot. And then when we got the word that he had movement and he had feeling in his body, that was a big relief. And then obviously later on, someone said, yeah, he didn't land on the back of his, you know, on his back and back of his head. Thankfully it was more on the front. Thankfully being that it wasn't there, because not thankfully it happened, if that makes sense.
No, we said the same thing. It's like one of those situations where given what you thought was possible, like it was a relief just to hear, oh, he just broke his wrist. His face is banged up. Like he's obviously out for the season, but you were just, because your mind was going to what the absolute worst could be, like you felt like it was a win.
Absolutely. I mean, if 10 feet down is not a small amount. Like,
especially from like, oh hearing, God, yeah.
With that kind of momentum, you hear about people falling off of ladders all the time and serious damage. And, you know, as I always kid, when guys go up and people were talking about Jobby and fearful of going up and getting upended, you know, that floor is not made of a padding or a foam or a pillow. It's made of wood. Wood does not forgive. When you hit it, it hurts. And that's just from like a foot or two. How many times have we seen a guy just upended on a rebound and it's, you know, 3 or 4 feet the landing and you're like, ooh, and now, you know, triple that, 9 feet. He basically pulled himself up to try to avoid the contact, and that's when he got bumped and lost the grip. That's 10 feet in the air. No thanks. No, I don't ever want to see it again, and I hope no one else ever has to go through it. And it was awful. And, you know, I applaud everybody involved, the medical staff and everybody with the Grizzlies and the Hornets and their arena. And you looked at our team, and I think one of the really – I don't want to say cool things because there's really nothing cool about the situation, but one of the like heartwarming things about it was they were circled up, arms around each other, quiet, heads down, and obviously were you know, thinking all the positive thoughts for their teammate, and that showed a lot to me.
All right, so let's talk about it now. I presume this means Vince Williams is going to pop back into it, but we've been talking about the need to cut down the rotations, and it really does feel like now it's just become it's not even necessarily the circumstances. It's just kind of out of available players. Like, do you think we're even going to – like, how many guys do you think we're going to see playing in meaningful minutes tonight?
Well, I think you have to focus on these 48. You can't worry about what's tomorrow.
Yeah.
You win this one, and essentially you cannot be eight. You're not going on the road. So even if you end up in the play-in, you're not going on the road. You win this one, you are here. That's the lock, and that's it. You got to play Scotty. You got to play Santi. I think you've got to try to bring Luke Kennard around.
Yeah,
I mean, he's just something. I don't know if he's just a little hesitant, whatever it may be. He's not taking all the same shots that he was, and then in the game in Charlotte when he did, they didn't go. And when you get into that mental aspect of the game, I mean, I feel like I've gotten to know Luke pretty well over the last couple of years, as from announcer to player, not like his best friend, but it's not a guy that usually is thinking, should I take this shot, because he knows what he's there to do, and you got to get him right. Vince steps in, it's there. You're already without Brandon, but yeah, I think you're looking at an 8-9 man rotation, and you really hope that maybe Gigi Jackson can find some of the things from last year. Obviously, he's been rattled a little bit. He came back. It wasn't quite the same. And then even in the last ball game, it wasn't quite there. But you don't try to start pushing a ton of buttons. You know that if you go to Conchar or you go to Huff, if you need a couple of minutes, they'll be ready to go. You know if you go to Cam Spencer, same thing. But you've got to roll with the rotations you think are the best and the ones that are working best. Because this is not a Minnesota team that beats you with their bench. Let's be frank and honest about it. It's not, no offense to the guys in the second unit of the Timberwolves. They're in a higher level of basketball than 99.99% of humans will ever dream of. But if I'm Chris Finch tonight and I need this win and my next two are against lottery teams, I'm looking at the five on the floor and Mike Conley if he doesn't start tonight, and Naz Reid, and there you go. We're going seven deep tonight, boys. Maybe Dante DiVincenzo. I haven't looked at the injury report, so I usually do that a couple hours before the game because it can change, but I'm going with my best guys. I'm giving the ball to Anthony Edwards all night long. I'm giving the ball to Julius Randle all night long, and I'm letting it rip. So you got to match that. And these are the nights you look forward to. You don't want to be on the wrong end at the end of it, but this is, getting ready for today, talking to people. I had a chance to catch up with, their radio announcer and Mark Kestisher from ESPN Radio last night. And everybody's just super excited. The three of us were talking about, this is what we live for. This is the time we love these opportunities to bring this to life, and it's a blessing. So, and if you don't win, it's not the end of the year. I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's not great. Nobody's going to be happy. Nobody's going to get on that plane. But you get that victory, everybody's going to feel 10 feet tall when they get on that plane, hopefully get some rest, and then you let it rip against Denver. And if you get those two, I think you're looking at being out of the, you're looking at a real good chance of being out of the play-in and getting some rest. Now, some people are saying, do you really want that? Because you might draw the Lakers in that 3-6 matchup. Yeah, man, you know what? I want my guys to be competitors. Throw anybody at us. We are going to try to finish as best we can. We want to finish with 50 wins. We want to win every single game the rest of the way, get a rest, and get ready for whoever's in the three spot, which after last night appears like it could be the Lakers, probably will be the Lakers. They have the advantage, and that's what they're playing for. Okay, awesome. Then let's go let it rip a bit, against LeBron and Luka and company if we can. If you can't, you accept the reality of it, and you get ready for whoever you're going to play.
Eric, do we owe this revamped staff a little bit of credit for maybe unlocking some of the best from Zach Edey here?
I kind of figured you might go there, Cobb. I love it. I just think they're using him a little different. And again, however that broke down, for whatever reason, prior to the change, there was not a lot of high pick and roll. And remember when, I remember talking to you guys after they drafted him. This is the guy that can now kind of fill that role from Steven Adams, who used to set condominium-sized screens for Ja, let him go down and break people down and find open guys. Yeah, that's what it was, but they didn't use him that way. And then there was the inconsistency of where he was. And look, I don't know if that was Taylor Jenkins. I don't know if that was you know, the staff that was with him, whether that was Noah LaRoche, whose name keeps coming up and all this stuff, or whatever. I know what I was told from people that knew Tuomas's offense in Europe that won a title. And they said, yeah, he wasn't shy to use the high pick and roll in Europe, so I'm not sure why you guys aren't using it. There's a couple of announcers in our league, and I don't want to say who they are, but they study this stuff incessantly. And they're like, well, don't you know the number? I'm like, look, man, what percentage of high pick and roll and what percentage of corner threes and what percentage of wing threes we take, I don't know that I'm going to have time to put that into my broadcast. I'm going to tell our listeners what happened. And if they don't run a lot of that stuff, then okay. But it does look like going to more of that, there's been a lot more initial screens when the ball crosses half court, getting things going. Now, with that said, it's changed where Jaren has been a little bit on the court.
Yep.
It maybe has opened some things more up for Dez. And now you got to find out how to get Jaren back into the groove he was in prior to that. Now, let's be honest, some of that groove that Jaren was in, because he was taking the shoulder of the load and he was the guy that was going to go be the alpha when Ja wasn't available. And when Ja was available, they were working together. I mean, you had nights where both one of them went off and then the other one.